hello. How are you? I am fine. Thank you for asking. It's time for Vox Pop. It's 2 o'clock. It's a Thursday, December 26th is the date. And is your elbow hurting? Can you tell when it's going to rain by the pain in your knee? Do you have some shins that hurt, or the dogs are hurting you, the shoulders, whatever? We have a physical therapist in the house today who can answer your questions about your pain. Matthew Goodemot is with us today. If you have a question that a physical therapist might answer, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Physical therapy, the one and only Matthew Goodemot. Your call's coming up. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining us once again today is physical therapist Matthew Goodemot. Matthew is a physical therapist who specializes in orthopedic care. It has for the 25 years or more, probably more. This script has got to be a couple of years old. His expertise is focused on helping people with orthopedic issues. He is particularly skilled in spine health, holding a diploma from the McKenzie Spine Institute. He's a popular guest on this show, so if you have an ache or a pain you think physical therapy might remedy, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Of course, you may email us, voxpop@wamc.org is the email, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemot, welcome back. Happy New Year. How you doing, man? You're back from Denmark.
Yes. We got back in the fall, October, November, somewhere or another.
So you've been unable to gauge the response to the potential purchase of Greenland.
Yes.
Okay. That's all over the news.
Yes. So. I'm sure the Danes are not really thrilled about that either.
I don't know. I mean, who knows how much it costs them to keep the place up? I don't know. So what's new, man?
Oh, just living in Saratoga right now. Both my kids are home for the holidays, and that's really nice.
Yeah, you having a good time?
Yeah, it's really nice. Yeah.
It is nice. It's a great time of year, and it's great. You know, I've already done some shoveling, just saying, try to do it the right way as you explained it, but it hasn't worked out. My back always hurts.
Yeah.
So as we start the show here, why don't you remind us, you know, this business of use your knees, not your back.
Yeah.
You're shoveling, man.
Yeah.
That's impossible. Explain.
Yes. Well, the thing that I like to tell people is to try to focus on keeping their spine straight or sticking their bottoms out a little bit. So
while you're shoveling.
Yeah. So the whole part, lifting with your knees, I always demonstrate in a clinic, you can still slouch really badly and still use your knees.
Yeah.
So the bigger point is to try to keep your spine straight. And by doing that, we call in physical therapy hinging at the hips. So your hinge, using the hip movement and keeping the spine straight.
Nah.
So, and then with the shoveling, it's going to both sides. So a lot of people just get stuck shoveling to their strong side and they keep rotating repeatedly depending on how much shoveling they're doing. And the best way to do that is actually to alternate and shovel both sides.
I like to shovel directly over my head.
Yes.
It just goes out and then up and over. It's, it takes a little extra work, but the back feels great.
Yeah.
Our guest today is Matthew Goodemot. It's physical therapy today. 800-348-2551 is the number. And we have an email here at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's tackle this one first. This is from Marion, who says, I was diagnosed with trochanteric bursitis in my right hip. After 3 months of painful walking, I finally had a steroid injection and experienced no change in the pain. Every step I take hurts. I miss my exercise regimen of walking 2 to 3 miles a day. Would you recommend PT? If so, what sort of physical therapy sessions? What would they consist of?
So trochanteric is your trochanter is a bony protuberance on your femur, on your thigh bone, and there's a bursa right there. And if that bursa gets irritated, it hurts with things like walking.
What's a bursa?
A bursa is a sac of fluid that helps to minimize friction between bone and tendon.
Okay.
And specifically in this case. And what happens with the irritation is anytime you walk or do stairs or things like that, it rubs on it, so it's painful.
Right.
Physical therapy is an excellent idea. So the idea behind the injection is that if it's truly inflamed, then when you get the anti-inflammatory, it goes away and you feel better. However, there's tendons that attach right near that bursa.
Yeah.
And oftentimes it's diagnosed as bursitis, but it's actually the tendon that's causing the problem. And in which case, doing strengthening exercises is the solution. And PT's great for that.
But it's going to hurt when you do those strengthening exercises,
not
right?
necessarily. So there's a few things. So in the clinic, I would do a bunch of manual techniques too. So you would alleviate the tension in the muscles. And by doing that, you can reduce some of the pain. And then most PTs, especially modern PTs, we try to avoid provoking people. So we'll do exercises.
That's what I try to do as well, as a matter of fact.
So we'll do things that are not painful. And there's a whole bunch of exercise, activation exercises you can do for your glute muscles, your butt muscles.
Right.
And you can do them laying down to start, which eliminates the weight bearing. And that's a good way to get going. And then there'd typically be exercises to do from home as well. And then over the course of a few sessions, there should be some improvements. And with that, then just things continue to go in the right direction.
What sort of exercises would one do to strengthen one's glutes?
So there's a couple things. There's popular exercises in the clinic where you do bridges, for example, and that's where you lay on your back and lift your bottom off the floor. There's other exercises called clamshells, which people do laying down, especially early on. But then you do want to get standing up. And then anytime you're standing on one foot, you have to use your glute muscles on the stance leg in order to keep yourself standing. So PTs will do single leg activities to help strengthen the glute muscles. We use a lot of bands, a lot of weights, things like that.
Yep. I mean, okay, so you could stand on one foot and that will help. Do you alternate feet?
Yes. So not necessarily. So it depends on where the issue is and what stage of the progression they are in. So if someone came in with a really irritated bursitis, I'm going to do things where it's pretty much non-weight bearing. So I'm going to unload them on the table and eventually to the floor for them to do at home. But as they're progressing, I would want to get them standing because that's functional. And she mentioned wanting to walk. And so you have to simulate those type of things.
Could it be that the walking has caused the problem? Maybe more sedentary lifestyle? No?
No. So walking could definitely be it, but it wouldn't be because the walking per se. It could be a gait, a mechanical thing. So for example, if one of her toes turned out when she was walking, that creates problems in the glute muscles, and that could lead to a bursitis. Or it could have been overuse, so she'd gone from inactivity, being sedentary, to walking a lot, or just progressing. So going from actually, the winter months is common, too, because of the slippery sidewalks and people change how they walk and things like that.
So. How much exercise do you do a week?
Me?
Yeah.
7 days a week, right?
Set.
4 days of cardio and 3 days of strength training.
Okay. All right, I withdraw the question. 800-348-2551 is our number. Matthew Goodemote is here. It's physical therapy. Let's begin in Hartford. It's Bob. Hello, Bob. How are you?
How you doing? I'm doing okay. The only problem I have is we're in our 70s, and the other day my wife took a fall onto the ice.
Ouch.
And I don't know whether she cracked or bruised or broke a rib, but we didn't go to the hospital for an x-ray because I don't know what you can do for ribs, and I didn't know. And I'd like to know what he would say about ribs and cracked ribs or bruised ribs.
Well, first of all, it's always a good idea to get an x-ray because your lungs are right underneath your ribs and a whole bunch of other important organs. So if there is a crack, it can lead to some problems in internal organs. So I would highly recommend getting that x-ray. But as far as what you do with ribs, as far as therapy goes, the good news is we breathe. So every time you're breathing, your wife's breathing, then the muscles in between the ribs are exercising and working, and the ribs kind of limit what you can and can't do. So gradual activity, low-level activity, moving around, changing positions, doing some light walking and things like that, those are all things that will be helpful and the healing process.
But imaging is a good idea.
100%.
Bob.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it, should you, well, a day has gone by, and she's just been resting on the couch. Is that a wise thing to do?
Again, the x-rays rule out more serious things, so it'd be a good idea to get the x-rays just to make sure there's nothing else happening. And something as simple as if you injured the internal organs, they can be bleeding and leading to the bruising that you're seeing. And it's not the rib, it's actually the internal organs, and that can be really catastrophic. So it's really a good idea to do that. And then generally speaking, the ribs will dictate what you can and can't do. So laying around all day is okay initially, first 24 or 48 hours, but activity is also good. But the x-ray is really where you need to go, Bob. So right, I would recommend getting the x-ray.
All right. Thanks a lot, Bob. Appreciate the call. 800-348-2551. That's the telephone number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Zach is gesticulating in there. All right, Zach, let's take a break. Do some underwriting, play a little lovely music. Matthew Goodemote is our guest. 800-348-2551 is the number. We'll be back. Sonny Rollins on Impulse here on Vox Pop. 800-348-2551. That's our telephone number. If you have a question for physical therapist Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab a couple of emails right now. This is from Joe. I'm a 68-year-old man. One morning I woke up, my left shoulder was hurting very badly. Next day, I lost completely the movement in the left hand. Can't pick it up. I cannot move it out. I have movement in the fingers, though, but I cannot pick up my left hand, and it's 5 months now. I went to a few spine specialists and microneurologists. 5 out of 6 say that this is called Parsonage-Turner syndrome. One of them said I need spine surgery, and I really don't know where to turn. It's not getting better. It's past 5 months. Did you ever hear of this kind of a syndrome, Parsonage?
Not Parsonage, no. It does sound neurological, obviously, and if that's – I don't know what that one is, Ray, so I don't know how to advise. If it is coming from the spine, I'd have to look it up to see if it's a brain issue or spine issue. It seems spine because it's unilateral, one-sided, but I haven't heard of that one.
You know, there are some things physical therapy can't fix, right?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes.
And we don't know about that.
When you get into nerve stuff and it's been 5 to 6 months, it's time to address it.
Okay.
That's a long time to wait, in fact.
It looks like Joe did that, though. He went to 4 or 5 neurologists.
Yeah.
So
if they're advising for surgery, I would. So if you get more than one neurosurgeon saying the same thing and talking about the same type of surgery, that's what it would likely be. I just don't know well enough.
Fair enough. Yeah. Well, we'll move on then. Okay. Carolyn in Kingston writes, I have developed some arthritis in my hands and thumbs this past fall. Now I have a trigger thumb, left hand. What should I do to improve this problem? Is this due to too much typing on the computer? Hang on. What's a trigger thumb?
Trigger
again?
Thumb is the tendons get the sheath where the tendons go through get some adhesions and whatnot, and it creates a weird kind of movement in the thumb. Tendons, period.
What does it do, though?
It affects mobility. It affects strength. It affects function. So it's not something that I've ever heard being caused by too much typing. There's other possible reasons behind it. There are procedures you can have done. Physical therapists would work on restoring mobility and trying to do tissue work and things like that. I have worked on trigger fingers. I've never worked on a trigger thumb, so I don't know how that would be different than trigger fingers. I don't think it would be.
I'm just trying to figure out why they call it trigger finger or trigger thumb.
Yeah, because it has a snap to it. So when the tendon moves, there's an abrupt... I'm demonstrating to Ray, which no one can
see. Oh, I thought you were doing little sock puppets without the sock. Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Which is great for the radio. Yeah. So it creates an abrupt, sudden movement of the finger like it would be pulling a trigger.
All right.
So
let's see. This is from Nick. Okay. Who says, long story short, but it's still miraculously long. I'm active, 39, 6 feet, 160 pounds. It has been 3 months since I got caught up on the stairs. One leg stayed up, the other went down a few steps. It tightened all week, then the next week was increasing pain per day to the point of extreme. I still have what seems like an extra muscle on the outside upper part of my knee. I've been going to physical therapy since November. It helped a lot at first, and I did do the home exercise, but now it's more uncomfortable for a few days after. Is it common for people who want to stop after a few months? What is this extra muscle? I still can't squat, and they don't seem to know what it is.
I don't know what the extra muscle is either. That's one of those weird things.
Does that happen, or is Nick not from this planet?
There's no such thing as an extra muscle, okay. Especially right. From a weird step. My immediate goes, is it swelling that he's noticing? Is if there's a tear of a tendon, but that's something a PT would be able to pick up pretty easily. It's really obvious. So I'm not really sure what that extra muscle, what he's just alluding to with that. But as far as PT goes, when you're seeing good results, the idea is, yes, you need to continue. And it's very common for people to start to feel better and then they stop thinking that, oh, I made it over the hump, so I'm going to be good. And then they regress. And that's one of the biggest pet peeves of most PTs on the planet. If you resolve it all the way, it tends to go away and stay away. If you resolve it 50%, if it comes back, it's going to be one of those cycles that comes back.
So once we go to a physical therapist, then we're locked in for life?
No.
We're going to regress?
No. But the exercise themselves, and if there's still not improving, then it does require some modifications or changes to the exercises. But there also are times where people have an expectation that the muscles are going to continue to get better like they did in the early stages. But that muscles take time. You can't make physiology go faster just because you want it to.
Yeah.
But that's something a PT would be able to explain. So if I had someone that came in and they had made the initial improvements, but now we're working on building their strength, that can take 4 to 6 weeks.
Right.
And I would describe it in a way to help them understand that if you persist with this over the course of the next 4 to 6 weeks, you'll see these gains, this type of thing. Things will get easier. It'll still be there, but you'll be able to do it. Instead of 3 repetitions, you'll do 5 repetitions. Instead of having difficulty going up 5 stairs, you can go up 7 stairs. So sometimes the gains are very small, but they are still gains. Mm-hmm. You're progressing. And as long as that's happening, then I would say to continue. However, let's assume that there's swelling, and that's what the extra muscle is. Until the swelling's gone, it can't get all the way better.
Okay.
So to me, I always prioritize abolishing swelling, restoring range of motion 100%, because either of those two things that aren't fully recovered will lead to that regression and on and on again.
Interesting. So. Okay. So the extra muscle is probably not a muscle.
No.
All right.
It's not another muscle. Well, not that I know of.
For another show. All right. Let's 800-348-2551. That's the number. Matthew Goodemoat's our guest. It's physical therapy. 800-348-2551. Let's go to Who's a Tonic and Chris. Chris, you're on.
Yeah, Matthew. I've been having a problem, and it's my left groin. And I'm an active bowler, and every time the night I was bowling, I felt a very severe pain there. And I haven't been bowling since.
Okay.
And I even went to the emergency room to have it looked at.
Okay. Did they take x-rays?
They did take an x-ray the next day because they went there that night. I had to go back the next day and have an x-ray done to see if there was a blood clot. Yeah. And they detected nothing, Gordon.
So in the groin, there's two major things. There's your muscles, and especially with bowling type of things, that could be the number one choice. But your hip joint is also in the groin. And so it's possible that you irritated either one or both. The good news is that it is safe in the sense of when you're doing something like bowling, if the pain is too severe, then obviously don't try to push through that. But activity for tendons and activity for joints in both cases are beneficial. So doing absolute rest is not a good plan.
The thing is, I've been also putting creams on it, too.
Yeah, but if it's a tendon or a joint, then they'll need to be moved. So the solutions won't be... So a lot of those creams and ointments, they call them irritants. So they irritate the skin. And they help to minimize the pain, but they don't address the actual source of the pain, which is going to be a tendon or a joint.
There you go. So,
will I still Would I be able to ball, though?
Oh, it's impossible for me to know. I'd have to do an assessment to check how your movement is and to check if it is a tendon or a joint. And so there's different tests that physical therapists do in the clinic, and we can do those tests to identify tendon versus joint. And then based on what the results of the test indicate, then we would give you the plan is exercises specifically for tendon or joint, depending on which one it is. And then eventually, yes, bowling would be the goal, but sometimes it requires the therapy first.
What's your average, Chris?
Between 170 and 180.
So that's pretty good. All right, good for you. Well, I hope the bowling career continues to flourish, and thank you for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Let's go to Falls Village. Hello, Heather. You're on.
Hi. I had trigger finger. If the woman's still listening. And I went to my physical therapist, who is quite wonderful, mm-hmm. and he tried heat mm-hmm. and dry needling, and it's completely gone.
Yeah.
It took a number of procedures, but, you know, once we've done it, it's gone, and it's perfect yeah. now.
Good. So in New York State, we're not allowed to do dry needling. So
what is dry needling?
Dry needling is a physical therapist version of acupuncture.
No way.
So you use the same type of needles, and you go after specific areas of tension, trigger points in the muscles and whatnot.
Why would New York State not allow you to do that?
Ray, that's a great question, and I don't have an answer for you.
Interesting. But Heather, it worked for you?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. He uses dry needling for every problem, and they all work.
Yeah. Dry needling is a very effective, especially for certain type of conditions and painful conditions.
Okay, well, I learned something there. Heather, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's our number. And, you know, when you call, let us know what your bowling average is. It's always nice to find out. Elizabeth in Albany. Elizabeth, you're on.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Yes. How do you know when pain in a shoulder is due to a rotator cuff situation or something else? I've had mixed reviews on getting surgery to correct it.
Okay.
And it seems to come and go on in my situation.
Oh.
And affects range of motion, of course.
Yeah. It is unusual for a rotator cuff to come and go. So this is how I would identify. So first things first, if there was shoulder blade pain, I think of neck. Because the majority of times people have shoulder blade pain, it's coming from the neck, not from the shoulder joint itself. The shoulder joint will have limited range of motion, like certain movements, especially behind the back and overhead type of things. The rotator cuff...
Putting on one's coat.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. The rotator cuff comes typically with... It can come with limited motion, like putting a coat on, but it also comes with weakness, typically. So in physical therapy, we would do a rotator cuff test. There's a couple different tests. There's one called an empty can, for example, where you imagine you take a can of soda and stick your arm out to forward and slightly to the side and then turn it, empty the can. And that's isolating a specific rotator cuff muscle. And in the clinic, I would also palpate. So if you have rotator cuff pain, it's going to typically be on the backside where you have a muscle called the infraspinatus and teres minor. Those are two rotator cuff muscles. Or on the side of the shoulder, which is your supraspinatus. Those are the most common areas for pain. And so if people have pain there, in addition to weakness, then I generally think it's a rotator cuff problem. The fact you say it comes and goes makes me suspicious, though, because a tear doesn't come and go. Oh. If it's tear, it's always a tear. So it would seem like there might be something else, and that could be joint-related, and you could have issues depending on where the joint position is. Things like the labrum could be injured, and that would affect intermittent
pain. I've had massage therapy that has helped it a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's not a debilitating. It doesn't prevent me from putting on a coat.
Yep.
But it's there, and it's worse some days than others. Yep. It is on the top of my shoulder.
Okay.
That doesn't seem to be coming from the back shoulder blade, but it's right on the top of my shoulder, kind of right behind my neck a little bit.
Okay.
And it's just a pain in the neck. That's what it is.
Let's talk about the shoulder, because the shoulder is actually the point out to the side. So where your arm is, the very top of your arm is the shoulder. The upper part where the head and the neck join, that's still the neck. And so if you're having on the top of the shoulder near your neck, I would eliminate the neck symptoms, because neck symptoms would definitely cause pain, limitations in motion, and become intermittent. Mm-hmm. So, and palpation usually decides that. And then one last thing, that if the rotator cuff, if you've had an MRI and it showed a tear and it's less than 50%, then usually rehabilitation can help that. And that's physical therapy specifically doing strengthening. If it's more than 50%.
And surgery isn't a cure and is usually recommended or not?
If it's 50% more, if it's more than 50% rather, a tear, surgery is your best option. If you don't want surgery, you can still try therapy. But usually the surgeons would say that if it's more than 50%, your odds go downhill precipitously. So,
okay. All right, Elizabeth, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. You talk about palpation.
Yes.
That's just basically squeezing, right?
Yes. Poking, touching, pushing, squeezing.
Yep. Okay. Yep. Well, go ahead. You first.
So what I would typically do when you start off and someone's new to you, you don't go in too aggressively, and I certainly don't squeeze, then I'm just literally putting my hands on someone, let them get used to it, and then I start to add pressure.
Yeah.
And then there's key points, depending on the injury, that will tell us, is this coming from a joint? Is this coming from a muscle? Is this a neck? Is this a shoulder? Or things like that.
Other than making you feel better, perhaps, what exactly will massage accomplish?
Massage is blood flow. And so anytime you're increasing blood flow, you can help to reduce inflammation. It also helps with the healing process. It promotes healing. But the big thing is pain relief, for sure.
Yep. We're joined today by physical therapist Matthew Goodemote. If you have a question for Matthew, give us a shout. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Email if you want. It's voxpop@wamc.org. Let's grab one more at least before the next break. We'll go to Kingston. Jessica, you're on.
Hey there. I had a concussion. I also slipped on ice like an earlier caller. Did not hit my head, but sustained a concussion 3 weeks and 3 days ago. And I am still experiencing headaches and a stiff neck.
Yeah.
And I'm unsure. I rested initially, but I've been doing some yin yoga, but I am a regular exerciser. When I do a little bit of exercise, it seems to increase my head pressure afterwards.
Yeah, so anytime you have a fast, sudden movement, whether you hit your head or not, you can cause a concussion. Mm-hmm. So that's why, even though you didn't hit your head, you had a concussion. So the good news is there are lots of things you can do, and physical therapists are really good at this. It would be important to go specifically to a physical therapist, though. And so, for example, you have things in your inner ear, and you could disrupt your vestibular system.
Oh, that's crystals. What it's
caused. Yeah. But it can, and those type of things can lead to ongoing problems and headaches and the pressure. And there's manual techniques you can do to help alleviate the muscle tension, which will indirectly help the symptoms in the head. But exercise is vital to recovery, but it has to be gradual. And it's really important that you have somebody who is monitoring these things, because if you don't, then you can have long-standing effects. And so I would highly, highly recommend getting into a PT and let them do it, because there's lots of good PTs who know concussion therapy and would be able to help you. Yeah.
All right, Jessica.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Do you ever have positional vertigo?
No, not really.
I had it a couple times. I had some ear infections and had it. And you have to do this Epley maneuver, maneuver, which is like drunken yoga. You're on.
Yeah.
It works, though.
Yeah.
The crystals realign.
Yeah. Most of the PTs know how to do it, Ray, but I didn't spend a lot of time treating it. So I'm always nervous to do it. Because you can make someone throw up if you do
it wrong.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Well, maybe I was doing it different. Maybe it was a different Epley.
No, it was his brother.
It was very easy.
Yeah. No, it is. But if you had the person go to the wrong direction, it can cause the crystals to go further and make the situation worse.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It's all my own thing. 99.99% of PTs do it, and they do it, think it's easy.
Yeah.
It's one of those that freaks me out.
Really?
So I'm not a vestibular guy.
All I can tell you is my kids found it endlessly hilarious. Oh, Dad's doing the Epley maneuver again.
Yeah.
All right, let's take a break. 800-348-2551. That's the number. Matthew Goodemote's our guest. It's physical therapy. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. We'll be right back. The Marquees here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Matthew Goodemote is here, and let's see. This one's from Fran. Fran writes, well, the subject heading is pain after power walking. And Fran writes, here's my question. After power walking outdoors or indoors for cardio exercise, I ache all over, low back, both knees. I'm 77, always have been active. I don't like gyms, but do some weight training at home. I've always been active, swim all summer, etc. I bike, treadmill, and other walking machine. My shoes are fine quality. I do not pronate or supinate.
Supinate.
Yep. Okay. I'll have to get back to you on that.
Yep.
Why am I in such discomfort when I'm trying to be active and keep a healthy heart? Just old age arthritis? And that's from Fran.
So there's a few things that come to mind for me. Number one is it's power walking is just really aggressive walking, so going fast and hard, which is to get the heart rate up.
Right.
So there's other options. You can do walking with a backpack and have some weight in the backpack. They call it rucking nowadays.
I'm sorry, what do they call it?
Rucking. Like a rucksack. I like that, especially for women, because it's also loading the spine, which is good for osteoporosis and a good way to get the heart rate up. But to address her question, so sometimes just the how aggressive the walking is can lead to soreness. During the activity, it would be something, if it's getting worse and worse the longer she's going, then I would want to address it. If it's fine while walking and then she's sore for a little while after, it depends on how long after as to whether I would be concerned or not. If she was sore for 30 minutes to an hour, it's just a hard workout and her body's sore from it. If it's sore for 3 days, then something else is going on.
Even at 77.
It doesn't matter. It would depend on the activity level prior. There's too many variables that way. So for me, I try to stick with just the objective time frames, because if it goes past a certain point, then I know there's something else going on. If it's short duration, then it's most likely nothing. But all that being said, there's other ways to do it, like doing hills, doing intervals. So intervals is especially good, where you go for a minute really hard and then back down to a casual walk. And that up and down is good for the cardiovascular system. Mm-hmm. And it tends to be less stressful than consistent power walking.
So if Fran wanted to begin rucking, how heavy should the pack be?
I start with 200 pounds. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. So it always start off light, like 10 pounds. It could be a backpack. They have weight vests and things like that that are fairly inexpensive to get. And you can just be hills too, though, Ray. So if she's inside and doing treadmills, walking up a hill is going to get the heart rate going, and you don't have to power walk then. But it can just be a backpack and putting a little bit of a water bottle or something like that.
Okay.
In there. But in the clinic, we would start with about 10 pounds and go all the way to 25 or 30 pounds as the women got stronger.
It occurs to me that rucking is probably the way Scooby-Doo swears. All right, let's a couple more emails, and then we will go back to the phones with Matthew Goodemote. 800-348-2551. Alice writes, I have advanced spinal stenosis in 3 lumbar vertebrae that has led to foot drop and left leg weakness beginning last year. I've been receiving physical therapy for past 3 months, some positive results, strength in my right leg. I'd like to know what activities are best to continue after PT is over and what activities I should avoid in the future concerning the spinal stenosis, and that's from Alice.
The good news with spinal stenosis, it's a structural problem, and it will determine what activities she can and can't do. Most times it's prolonged standing and prolonged walking. So, for example, cycling, especially riding a bike or recumbent, that should be something she could do indefinitely, and it would be good for the muscles. Swimming is another great activity you can do forever. With walking, though, there might be something, for example, she could walk 15 minutes and then it would start to cause problems in the leg, and so that would be the limit to how long she can walk. She can't go further, not because of willpower or anything. It's just because the stenosis is affecting the nerve, and it physically won't let her go.
Interesting.
It won't do damage. It just won't let her go further. So those type of things, if the stenosis is so severe that she can only walk like 5 minutes or so, that would be getting into the pool would be the number one. And number two would be doing something like cycling.
All right. So. This one's from Christine. And I know the dry needling thing is not done here in New York, but Christine was interested, said, in another state, would dry needling help with foot neuropathy? And that's from Christine in Waterville.
It depends on what neuropathy, what is coming from. So, for example, if it's a diabetic neuropathy, the chances are very, very low that it would help. Acupuncture is legal in New York State, and you can do acupuncture and see for neuropathies, and sometimes it helps, sometimes
it doesn't. But it's not the same? What's the difference?
It's not. Well, one's Eastern, one's Western. So the approach, the Eastern version is to get after the chi and to get the meridians flowing.
And that's legal?
Yes. And I think part of why the answer to why New York State doesn't is because the acupuncturists may not want the PTs doing that. I shouldn't say that because I'm not 100% sure of that answer. Only 37 states actually have made it legal. And as PTs, it doesn't make any sense. You have to get training and all that.
But, okay.
But anyway, so I know Vermont does. It is legal. So it is something to go over there. But I don't think if it's a neuropathy coming from diabetes, it is not likely that it's going to do any good. There are other type of neuropathies where it's not necessarily harmful to try. We have things like you could have a Morton's neuroma, which is a neuroma in the foot that causes symptoms in your toes.
Right.
And that's a neuropathy type thing. If it's coming from the spine, if you address the spine, and you can get rid of those type of nerve-related symptoms. But most neuropathies, especially if they're systemic-related, they're not going to respond to something.
Okay.
It's not harmful, though. All so right. It would be okay if you wanted to drive to Vermont to try it. But
physical therapy today with Matthew Goodemote, 800-348-2551. Let's go back to the phones. And Diane is in Northampton. Diane.
Oh, Diana. Yes.
Diana.
Earlier, somebody had mentioned bursitis, and I'm wondering, I twisted my back 2 years ago really badly, and I just saw a physiatrist, and he said that my ligaments and tendons were all stretched and that there was no repairing those, that they would never go back to normal. I've been to a physical therapist, and I continue to do my exercises, though not daily, which I guess I should be doing. And I have this sharp pain still in my right side, my like hip area, low back area. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure what to do about it. I don't know if it's a stenosis. I don't know, you know, what steps do I need to take?
So I just want to address the first statement, because if you have stretched ligaments in the spine, it is really hard to do because they are incredibly thick and durable. But if you did, it is possible. And if you did, it is true they won't go back. Tendons, however, 100% can return back to shape, and they should be addressed with exercise. The lower back area, if you're having pain that's radiated into the buttock area, that is very common for the lower lumbar spine. And there are usually things you can do specifically going after the lumbar joints. And a McKenzie-trained therapist, for example, would give you specific exercises to get rid of those type of symptoms. If it's not coming from the spinal joint, there are muscles in the buttock area that can sometimes be as simple as doing strengthening exercises to build them back up. And again, those are the type of things. There's a lot of hope here because I'm very confident with the spine, and it's very unusual for there not to be something you can do to alleviate your symptoms and find relief. It's very, very rare.
Okay.
It does happen, but it's rare.
Go ahead, Diana.
So I have this sharp pain, like climbing upstairs, so much going downstairs, but if I move the wrong way, it's so sharp.
Yeah.
Would that be a bursitis that needs to be taken care of?
No. Well, bursitis is going to be very predictable, and it's going to be a very specific location. If it's a pain coming from the back or the buttock area, those are either the joint or the muscles of the back. It's very...
Okay. So
And the sharp pain, what you described was... Oh, sorry. The sharp pain that you described, that typically the first thing I think of is if it's not repeatable, if it's not every time you take a step, for example, then I would go to the joint because a tendon is predictable.
Oh.
And if it's a joint, then it can be the lumbar spine. It can be the sacroiliac, although probably not. And you can do quite a bit for that specific stretches.
All right, Diana. Thanks a lot for the call to Kingston. And Jack, you're up.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Sure.
So I've been jogging for about 3 decades. There's a new pain. it's in the hip. It's like if there was a guitar string in your leg and it twangs and that's pain.
Yeah.
And I don't know what's going on.
Okay. When you say hip, do you mean the outer part of your leg?
Yes.
Okay. So as a PT, the groin is your hip joint. That's why I'm asking that. So when you feel in the outer part of the leg, There's a few things. If it's down by the knee, there's a big tendon called your iliotibial, IT band, and that can create and it's very common with runners. It's actually one of the most common things with runners. If it's up by the hip itself, you have your gluteal muscles, and your gluteus minimus and medius attach right in the outer part of the hip, and they're very common to get irritated with running. And the good news is you can do quite a bit. Manual therapy helps to alleviate the symptoms and reduce some tension, learning the appropriate stretches, and then strengthen the heck out of your glutes and hip and core would likely have great results.
Jack.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for the call. Now, let me ask you a question, Matthew Goodemote, physical therapist. Are you a runner?
I am.
You do? How many miles do you run?
Well, I do 5 to 6 miles 3 days a week, and then I do one day where I go fast, which is slow. But
putting that aside, putting the fact that you are a partisan here, is it better for your joints and everything else if you swim rather than run?
So there's a fallacy about running being bad for joints. There's some research studies that have come out in the last 10 years to say that running is actually protective to knees, not harmful to knees.
But yet everybody calls up here, says I'm a runner, and and the other thing hurts.
But not joint. It's usually tendon, so it's different. If you've had an injury to the joint, like let's say you were in high school and you tore your ACL, that can definitely lead to problems with running later in life. But most runners are developing some type of tendon issue.
Right.
So swimming is great, and I'm an advocate of swimming, but it's also problematic for shoulders. For example, you have swimmer's shoulder, so it depends. And running is one of those things. If you like to run, I'm an advocate of running.
Okay.
So I'm an advocate of people being active, and the majority of times there's something you can do to modify or teach them or train them or strengthen them, and so they can keep doing the activities.
Matthew Goodemote is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Mike is in Wingdale. Hello, Mike. You're on.
Hi. So I developed TMJ maybe about 3 years ago in my jaw, and I went to the dentist, and he said, I'll get you a mouth guard, and it'll fix everything. But I still develop the issue every maybe 4 months. It'll last for like 2 weeks. And I went on YouTube, and I did all the exercises, and it's not that my jaw dislocates, it's just they said the muscles contract and they just lock up. Is there any kind of cure or instant, or can I take a pill, or what do I do?
Probably not a pill. There are PTs who actually specialize in TMJ type things, and massage therapists are also really good at it. Sometimes it's just a matter of getting into regular manual therapy techniques where you go, you know, every 6 weeks or 8 weeks and have people work on the tension in your upper back and neck area and in the jaw area. Sometimes you have to do an internal manual technique, and that's going to require somebody who's actually really familiar with TMJ. But there's a whole like specialty within PT, and I know there's a PT in Clifton Park who does it because he used to work for me. So there's going to be PTs in the area who do that, and they're really good at it. So I would advocate to get that. And they would also be able to show you exercises, because there's probably a couple exercises that you should be doing. And when you go on YouTube, they give you general exercises, and you may need a exercise, a single movement, not 15 movements. And if you get that specific thing, that could be the solution for you too.
Mike.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I'll give it a shot. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call. It's 800-348-2551. Matthew Goodemote is here. Let's go to Kingston. Abigail. Hello, Abigail.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
A number of years ago, I had a lower back pain, and I discovered an exercise which absolutely cured my lower back pain.
Mm-hmm.
And the exercise is as follows. Sit on a hassock or a low stool or something.
Mm-hmm.
Put your head between your legs, and I won't be nasty, I won't be vulgar.
Okay, good, that's great.
Put your head between your legs and relax.
Mm-hmm.
When you're finally really relaxed, take your arms and put your arms behind your knees and grab the instep of your feet.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
I mean, it worked. I have not had a back pain whenever I feel the slightest, you know, stiffness.
Yep.
I do the exercise, and it works. So and thank you for all the work you're doing.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Abigail.
There are people who respond. It's a flexion movement, and it's an overpressure, and that's one technique. But there's some people out there who have really bad herniated discs, and I wouldn't advocate that forward flexion.
Okay, so
absolutely.
Yeah. Trust your professionals. Thanks, Abigail. And I got to tell you, the description of that, it sounds like it might be at a sideshow. I mean, I don't even know how you do that.
You have to be flexible.
Well, Abigail is evidently very flexible, and good for her. Let's go to Mark in East Moncton. Oh, Mark, you're on.
Yes, I'm I've had issues with trigger finger and gout and so on and so forth, and I found that just lowering my uric acid, so I had to go to a plant-based diet, but when I had my trigger finger, you know, I would ice it and so on and so forth, that would help. But just making a huge diet and, you know, taking tart cherry pills and celery, and I also soak fenugreek seed in water, and I drink that in the morning and eat and mush on the seeds, and that keeps my inflammation down.
Yeah.
And I had an issue with my left hand, and my middle finger, I could not bend it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And the joints all across were just really bad.
Wow.
So I just got back to that and putting a wedge of lime in my water every day just to make my system alkaline, and it's I've had no other issues.
Huh, darn it. That's interesting. Well, what do you think about that, Matthew?
Well, nutrition and having an anti-inflammatory type diet is, as general rule, good. There are people, though, that you can do those type of things and they still have an issue that they'll need intervention
for. So cherries, did you say, Mark?
Yeah, I take a tart cherry pill. It's called uric acid flush. It also has celery seed in it.
Huh.
And of course, celery and cabbage are great, but those two things just turn it around, along with taking a wedge of lemon in my canteen of water. Huh. My left hand, I'll tell you, my finger was straight, painful.
Yeah.
Wow.
It finally went down, and I used ice. I got a little ice gel thing. And
fantastic.
But, you know, turning 75 and all these issues are just, they keep coming at me, but I keep trying to figure it out.
Good job, man. Thank you for the call. All right, let me just play devil's advocate here, Matthew Goodemote.
Sure.
He takes a bevy of cherry pills and celeries and whatnot.
Yep.
If, and I'm not saying that's it doesn't work.
Right.
I have no knowledge of this, but would it go away on its own if you took nothing?
Oh, well, I don't know about that. The gout one is definitely nutritional.
Yeah.
And so having a really rich diet and things that can lead to it. So if you go away from that, it's going to have an effect.
And does the gout have something to do with the middle finger being stuck up in the air?
Depends on what part of the state you're from.
Hey, yeah. I was going to say, I'm on the Sawmill Parkway. You know, I can't get my middle finger to go down. All right, let's quickly go to Saugerties. Sherry, you're on. Only about 30 seconds here,
hey,
Sherry.
Thank you for taking my call. I spoke to you, Matthew, over the summer, cervical spine surgery and then a vagus nerve issue. And you connected me with your friend Dan. Thank you for that. He's amazing. Now my issue seems to be I've had a few atlas orthogonal adjustments, sound wave, that has freed up the vagus nerve. Now the issue is the costal chondroidal junctures.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, they're really frozen in the back, in the thoracic area, which is causing a great deal of pressure in my chest.
Yeah.
So my question to you is twofold. One, is there a movement to help mobilize, you know, those junctures? And two, how possible is that with a Harrington rod from T4 to T12?
So the costo, just for people listening, means ribs, and chondroidal, I can't say the word properly, is the cartilage. So it's where the cartilage and the ribs are. And with a Harrington rod, it's very, very difficult to get any type of movement, period. It's going to most likely come from a manual technique, because I don't even think a stretch that I could say out loud would do anything if you have rods. So Harrington rods prevent the spine from moving.
Okay.
Or scoliosis type of thing.
And
you don't get movement. That's the point of it. And I don't know how to, I can't even think of one. Extension would be the safe way to go and would try to be in the cervical spine. But honestly, it's not going to get down low enough to get any effect on the thoracic spine.
Sherry, I'm sorry, we're going to have to leave it there. We are out of time. Mr. Matthew Goodemote, what's happening for you for New Year's? You doing anything fun?
I'm not going to do anything on New Year's Eve.
No.
Bed early, but other than that, I'm looking forward to getting started with my next business adventure.
Okay. And we'll find out about that in due course, right?
Yeah, I'll update the bio for you, Ray, so we can.
Yeah, I guess we should probably update that. Hey, man. Hey, great to have you back States on a full-time basis, and we'll be talking to you next
year. Sounds great. Thanks, Ray.
Support comes from Waldorf School of Saratoga Springs, student artwork on display at the Saratoga Springs Visitor Center, showcasing how students can grow through art in every grade through December 31st. WaldorfSaratoga.org. Once again, thanks to physical therapist Matthew Goodemote for being here today. Thanks for the calls and for the emails. I apologize if we didn't get to yours. Matthew will be back multiple times in 2025 to answer your questions. And thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Peter Hughes. Hey, man, thanks for stopping in and doing the phones for us. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow at 2 p.m., well, it's our last Food Friday of the year, and we welcome back our buddy Amy Halloran. She loves flour and grains and stuff, but who knows what we're going to talk about. We're going to hang out, chat for an hour, perhaps get philosophical. I don't know. It might be dull as heck. It might be exciting. And either way, if you tune in, you'll find out, and you may be disappointed or you may be really happy. Either way, just tune in, please. I need a job.